A civil case involving former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams is currently before the High Court in London. Three victims of IRA bombings in Britain are seeking damages, and they're arguing that Mr. Adams, they say, bore responsibility for attacks in 1973 and 1996.
I believe that Gerry Adams was in the IRA.
But what does this mean for the veteran Republican who has always denied membership of the IRA and its Army Council?
I think all of us have a duty to show solidarity to all the victims, no matter who was responsible for their injuries or their deaths, and I think that's fair enough.
And why take this case now? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. So, this case, it centres on three major bomb attacks in Britain. The Old Bailey bombing back in 1973 and the Manchester and Docklands bombings, which happened in 1996. Three victims of those attacks have brought the action now against Gerry Adams. They argue that as a senior figure in the Republican movement, he himself bore responsibility for decisions that led to those bombings. Mr. Adams, for his part, completely denies that claim and has repeatedly stated he was never even a member of the IRA. And it should be noted, this isn't a criminal trial. Nobody here faces prison. Instead, the case really is about liability in the civil sense, and the damages, for what it's worth, that these victims are seeking amount to just £1. For them, I think this is really a trial of accountability and about acknowledging the harm done to victims of the Troubles. All of this, of course, comes at a time when the Labour government in Britain prepares new laws to overturn an earlier Tory law that ended all UK police investigations into Troubles-related killings. Today on the podcast, I'm going to take you inside Court No. 20 at the Royal Courts of Justice in London to find out what the wonderfully named, I have to say, Mr. Justice Jonathan Swift has heard in the opening week of the case. And to help me with that, I'm joined now by Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times. Mark, maybe we should start with the plaintiffs in this case. Who are they? What happened to them? And what is the claim that they are making against Gerry Adams?
Well, John Clark was injured in the Old Bailey bombing in 1973. He was one of 200 people who were killed when four IRA bombs were set off in London during that period of time. The Price sisters were later jailed for it, I'm sure you will remember. Jonathan Ganesh was one of those who was injured in the February 96 Canary Wharf bombing. That is the bombing that broke the IRA 94 ceasefire. And Barry Laycock is a former British rail worker who was injured in the Arundel bomb in Manchester a few months later, which caused hundreds of millions of pounds worth of damage in the city. They're taking a claim against Gerry Adams for £1 sterling, no more. They're alleging that he was a member of the Army Council of the IRA and that he had control and direction over the bombing campaign in England.
So their case is against Gerry Adams personally. The allegation is that he was directly responsible rather than the IRA more generally, which is interesting because the Provisional IRA already officially admitted responsibilities for these atrocities.
It's essentially what it amounts to is that the case is about proving that he was a member of the IRA and that he in turn was the directional force or one of the directional forces in the three bombings mentioned in 73 and then the two in 96. It's an interesting case. It's a civil case. It's not one being that has criminal repercussions for Mr. Adams one way or the other. But it's obviously a case of very great import to his reputation, both for himself and internationally, and given his standing within Sinn Féin.
And it's worth pointing out, because it is a civil case, the standard of proof here is the balance of probabilities, not in a criminal case where it's proving something beyond all reasonable doubt.
That's a relevant point, because whilst the standard of proof is lower, the proofs coming in are lower because you don't have serving police officers coming in with witness testimony and forensics and all of the rest of it. So, you know, it's an unusual case in that regard.
It's also interesting the span of time here, isn't it? Because we're talking about, as you say, the Old Bailey bombing, which people will be familiar with, I think, which really signalled, I think, the very beginning of the campaign of bombing in England by the IRA. And that 96 bombing actually really was the beginning of the end of the campaign there. So it's a significant period of time.
Exactly. And I mean, in a sense, it is the last chance saloon for cases like this. Ironically, the claimants were spurred into action by the Conservatives' passage of the legacy legislation. Now, their intention was to prevent any legal actions being taken against British soldiers and serving police officers in the security services. But the three claimants, when they saw this, also realised that what would be sauce for the goose would be sauce for the gander, and that would also mean that nobody in the IRA could ever be brought before a court again. So ironically, it's the Conservatives that Gerry Adams can most blame for spurring this case into life.
It's worth bearing in mind too, Mark, that being a member of the IRA was an illegal act, it was a criminal offence, and there were many individuals prosecuted over the years for that. 151 people were actually convicted of membership of an illegal organisation in Northern Ireland between 1974 and 1975, as an example. Gerry Adams was never one of them.
No, he wasn't. He was prosecuted for IRA membership, but the case was eventually thrown out. And it's interesting, I did a piece for Saturday's paper, and when you go back through the files, you have a certain memory of Adams denying membership of the IRA going back to perhaps the late 90s. It actually goes back much further, goes back way to the very early part of the 1980s, at a time, of course, when if he had said anything else, he would have been subject to prosecution. Now, people in Republican Sinn Féin and former people in Republican Sinn Féin were making the argument last week that he should have taken the line that was always taken by Rory O'Brodick, who was president of Republican Sinn Féin, and who simply always refused to engage with questions like this. And he would always say, we don't answer questions like that. End of story. So, but Mr. Adams has been doing this from the 1980s, and that was the course that he was going to continue taking forevermore.
And one of the other most significant things about these proceedings, I think, is that next week, Gerry Adams himself will be cross-examined for the first time in a British court about his alleged links to the IRA.
Yes, indeed. And it's striking that he's been here from the very first day. This story was a front page story on day one and day two of the trial, largely because he was here. If he hadn't been here, it would have attracted much less attention. Now, to be honest, one can only take that as a sign of confidence on the part of Mr. Adams, and John Finucane and other senior Sinn Féin people have been here as well. But as you say, Monday, Tuesday, it might drift into Monday afternoon by the look of it. The case is running a little bit behind time. And it follows on foot of his appearance in the Dublin libel action last autumn, when he successfully took a case against the BBC. Now, this is a very different environment, and it's a very different court. But nevertheless, it's going to be quite a moment when it happens.
And to be clear, he's under no obligation to take to the stand. He can't be compelled, from my reading of the law, to take the stand. It's his own choice to do so.
No, it's his own choice, and clearly one that he has been here throughout. He's been taking notes throughout. He's been fully engaged. There was a period yesterday afternoon when he had to get up because his back was killing him, as the same was affecting perhaps every one of us in the seats in the Foyle Courts of Justice, which are not meant to be sat on for very long. And at that point, the judge looked at him kind of slightly quizzically for a moment. And then I think there was a fellow sufferer looking at another fellow sufferer. So he let the moment pass.
Yeah, they tend to not make those wooden seats in court for relaxation, pleasure and comfort. OK, bring us into the High Court in London, where the case opened, as you said, on Monday of this week. And Gerry Adams turned up, and his presence created a stir, but what he was wearing, I think, created even more of a stir. He appeared to be wearing a stab or a bulletproof vest. What could he possibly be worried about or protecting himself against?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, because he did definitely wear it on day one, and he hasn't worn it since. unless he's got a bigger solution in the meantime, because it was very visible on day one. And he doesn't look like a man who's wearing it now. Now, curiously, a couple of his security people who were around this morning are wearing them quite ostentatiously. Now, you know, it's not realistic to argue that there is a security threat against him. He's been here many times. But, you know, people do what they do in these kind of situations.
Okay, so given that it was the first day of the court, they heard from lawyers from both sides, as is always the case, where both sides sort of outline what their legal argument is going to be, what their case is going to be. Did you get a good sense from those exchanges what the thrust of both the prosecution and indeed the defence's case is going to be?
Well, if you were a member of the public in the court, you'd have had a somewhat attenuated understanding of it, because the claimant's barrister, Judd, is not going through point by point with witnesses and going through their witness statements. And it's left very much to the defence to do that. We're obviously focusing on certain issues. So the judge is going to be making his decisions on the back of more of what he's read, perhaps in many ways, than what he has actually heard. The argument that has been made again and again by Gerry Adams's legal team is that the evidence and the intelligence is flawed. And if the intelligence had been any good, that they would have taken him to court and prosecuted him for membership at a whole variety of different points throughout. I mean, that team is coming back again and again. Shane Paul O'Doherty, the former IRA bomb maker, in fact, one of the people who was involved in the Old Bailey episode in 1973 and who then broke years later with the IRA, he was very vocal in a lengthy presentation, which ran over 2 days, where he was alleging that there is absolutely no doubt but that Mr. Adams was a leading figure in the IRA and that he couldn't have achieved any of the things that he's done in the years since without having been that. And he was making considerable play of the fact that his own contact was with Martin McGuinness. In fact, he admitted that up until yesterday, he'd never been in the same courtroom as Gerry Adams, but that McGuinness had always talked very highly of him, and he had talked of him as a comrade and, you know, not somebody who was peripheral to the Republican movement.
What else does Shane Paul O'Doherty have to say?
Well, he's talking about his own time in the IRA and talking about the level of control that was always displayed by the organization. And he was making the point that when he was involved in this at the very beginning, he had believed that a number of other former IRA people would give evidence. But now he found that he was the only former provisional who actually turned up. And he did make the point quite deliberately, I think, that the last member of the IRA to give evidence against a senior IRA figure in a civil case, that was Eamon Collins back in 99, and he ended up being stabbed in the face and eyes and left with a blade in his skull. And he made that point very deliberately. And even as he was leaving, the judge offered him the usual privilege that I've been able to stay on in court if he wanted to hear everything else. And he said, no, on security grounds, thank you, Judge, I'll leave.
He also pointed to a photograph allegedly showing Gerry Adams wearing an IRA beret at a funeral in the early 1970s. Can you tell me about that?
Indeed. That's an interesting one, because he came back to that on day two of his evidence. And on day one, he mentioned this. This is a very famous photograph of Gerry Adams, black beret, black rimmed glasses, in an IRA honour guard at the funeral of an IRA volunteer who'd been killed by the British Army. And he mentioned this on day one, and it was the subject of very considerable mockery on social media and from Sinn Féin people, basically saying, you know, is that all you've got in your case? Now, he came back at it on day two and very deliberately said, this is important, because nobody would have got within an ass's roar of an IRA honour guard in Belfast in 1972 wearing the black trousers and white shirt and black beret and marching in an honour guard unless they were an attested member of the IRA. It simply would not have happened. So that's his argument in that. And he also made the point that he wrote a rather well-regarded book about his time in the IRA, which was published in 93. And he made the point that Martin McGuinness, who he had maintained a relationship of mutual respect with, even though they had long since parted the ways politically and in every other fashion. But he said that McGuinness had asked him to include a reference in his book about the chain war talks in London in 1972. And that's when a provisional IRA delegation was brought to London to meet with Northern Secretary Willie Whitelaw. And Gerry Adams was part of that. And McGuinness was keen, for reasons I'm not entirely sure, I have to confess, that everybody should know now that the provisional delegation, and Adams, as I said, was a member of that, carried their own personal weapons into that meeting with the Northern Ireland Secretary. And for some reason, McGuinness was keen on having that known to the historical record, for reasons of amusement, one has to attest, or assume.
On Tuesday, the court also heard from two of the men bringing this action, Jonathan Ganesh and Barry Laycock, who you mentioned earlier. What did they have to say?
Well, I mean, they just went through the suffering that they faced. Jonathan Ganesh hasn't been in court since, but Barry Laycock has been here all week. And Barry Laycock is a man now in his 70s, someone who was injured in the Arundel bomb, hasn't been able to work on the railways since he was injured. For more than 20 years, his pain was such that he was getting spinal injections. His pain hasn't decreased, but the quality of his care from the National Health Service has, because the local pain clinic to him closed down. So they're now, in the year since, they put him on morphine, and he takes three different grades of morphine, up to 15 grams a day, which he can, and he can only take the strongest one rarely, because it just basically wrecks every other part of him. So he's a man who's been in agony every day since the day that he walked into that shopping centre.
Now, some of the witness testimony you observed this week was given anonymously. Why was that the case? Why was that facilitated? And what was the significance of the evidence that those witnesses provided?
Well, the RUC officers, former RUC officers, and that was a decision made by the judge. It was a decision that was challenged last year, in fact, by Adams's defence team, but it was rejected, and the judge allowed them to give evidence. It's a small place, people know each other, and the long shadow of the Troubles. And it isn't a question about being worried about Gerry Adams. It's a question about being worried about perhaps what other people might do at various points. So now, Timothy Hanley, former detective superintendent in the PSNI, he gave testimony on record. And he, in fact, was the officer who arrested Mr. Adams in 2014, if you remember, when he was arrested in connection with the Jean McConville kidnapping and murder. And that was in the wake of the Boston College tapes. And he accepted that there were significant and serious problems with the Boston College tapes. And it was pointed out to him that the Director of Public Prosecutions in the North eventually decided not to take a prosecution, not only on the McConville case, but also decided not to prosecute on the IRA membership case at a time when they could have done so.
And I also saw Richard Kemp giving evidence. He's a former British Army commander. He told the High Court that it was inconceivable that Gerry Adams was not involved in the authorisation of IRA bombings, that he had seen and been a witness to intelligence over a 20-year period to support this. But all of these witnesses obviously cross-examined by Gerry Adams's legal team to challenge all of that.
Yes, and the weakness that there is in the claimant's case with people like Richard Kemp is that nobody has come in and said, moment X, paragraph Y, we can show you a tape or we can show you a document or whatever it is that absolutely 100% proves what they say, because of the fact that they're, all of them are no longer in the roles that they're in. They're obviously, you know, unable to bring in live evidence. So that is a not insignificant issue in all of this. And we'll see how it plays out. It's a reserved judgment. So we won't know next week what the judge's ruling is, but there is no jury. The judge will decide. And clearly, Sinn Féin have been getting in some of their retaliation in fast, you know, effectively on the lines that a Sinn Féin politician could possibly never get justice in a British court. And regardless of what comes out here, even if there was a negative result, there will be large numbers of people in Northern Ireland and elsewhere who wouldn't accept a victory for the claimants, even if one were to happen.
I think it's worth reminding listeners, Mark, that what we've heard and what we've been discussing so far is mostly coming from the prosecution's case. It's their witnesses, it's their evidence, despite some cross-examination. We'll hear the other side next week, including Gerry Adams' own testimony. What are we likely to hear from him, do you think?
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, this is a very different environment to the case in Dublin last year, which was before a jury for a start. It's not clear how the claimants and barristers are going to approach it. And our understanding is that there isn't the critical new piece of information that absolutely proves membership or anything else. So it is very much a collation of all the evidence that we know to date and building up a picture to get to a point where no reasonable person could think other than what the claimants are saying, that he was a member of the IRA, that he was a senior figure and that he was involved in the bombings.
Again, the point that he has repeatedly denied time and time again when he's been asked over the decades. The one thing that really strikes me watching this case unfold, I have to say, Mark, is that for so many of the victims of the Troubles, there's so little accountability for them. There's so few of them who really get a sense that they have, I suppose, seen justice play out over the years.
Yes, and that's very clear in the case of Canary Wharf, because if you talk to Jonathan Ganesh, he will talk about some of his friends who were injured, and a man who had come to fill in a shift for his wife in the Midland Bank, very close to where the bomb went off, and he had been sitting in his car. And Ganesh will tell me the story about being badly injured himself, but nevertheless being able to see that his friend with his skull broken open and his brain hanging out. And that was 1996. That man died in a nursing home in 2018. He'd been nursed at home by his family for 24/7 for over 20 years. And you see this, John Clark, who's not here, who's in a state of ill health, exactly the same. You know, every day since 1973 has been a horror for all of those people. And, you know, separating Mr. Adams and the case and all of the rest of it, the shadow of the Troubles has been very heavy on this. It's also very clear from the case as well that the Troubles is very far away today for people in London. I mean, even listening to some of the conversation between the legal people from Mr. Adams and the judge, and people talking about Operation Canovo and who was the head of it, Ian Livingston, and what was its powers and areas. Considerable degree of ignorance in many ways. So, you know, we constantly make the mistake of thinking that people think about us far more than they do. But certainly in the case of the victims, I think the one thing that they're all, both here and people who've expressed opinions about it, they're all very clear on the fact that nobody has ever cared about them ever since any of them were injured.
Mark Hennessy, thank you so much for joining us on News Talk Daily. As Mark said, these hearings are going to continue right into next week, and Gerry Adams himself is meant to give evidence in his defence, and we'll keep a very close eye on those proceedings and update you here on the News Talk Daily podcast. If you've some time over the weekend, I'd encourage you to listen back to any of the episodes you might have missed. I'd actually really recommend you check out my conversation yesterday with CNN's Marshall Cohen. He talks about fears that US government insiders may be making hundreds and thousands of dollars through bets that they're waging on military action being taken, action that they have confidential knowledge of. It's a really good listen. And also actually on Monday's podcast, Kieran Rose gives a pretty fascinating account, and he talks actually really movingly about what it was like to be a young gay man in the years before decriminalisation in Ireland. This off the back of the government decision to finally approve a scheme to formally expunge the criminal records of men who were convicted for consensual same-sex. But for now, for me, Ciara Doherty, have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.